A new feature on the Council of Trent, Workshop Wednesday. Duck your head down, step on inside, and see what I'm working on here at Catholic Answers.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Council of Trent. I am your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today we're introducing another new feature of the podcast. As I've said in previous episodes, I've been trying to get the Council of Trent from being just a weekly podcast that equips listeners to being a daily podcast, something where I can offer you content Monday through Friday that helps build up your faith and gives you confidence to share the good news of Jesus Christ, the good news of the universal Catholic Church he established, with anybody you meet. And there's lots of good news. There's lots of tips, lots of resources to be able to share with you all. And that's why I'm excited to expand this podcast. And a big thanks to our premium members at Patreon. You guys are really making this possible to be able to devote more resources at Catholic Answers, more studio time, more work from our noble audio engineer, Nick Chamberlain, and others in our different departments that help bring all of these resources together. So big thanks. And if you want to keep expanding the podcast, visit TrenthornPodcast.com. If you're a premium subscriber, even at $5 a month, you get access to all kinds of great content, including an extra related to today's episode that you will be hearing right now. So what is happening in my workshop? A lot of people ask me, so what do you do at Catholic Answers when you're not on the radio, when you're not talking to atheists, when you're not talking to pro-choice people? Well, primarily, I think the thing that I do here the most, a lot of people think radio might be the thing that I do the most, though the podcast is actually catching up to that now that we're doing it daily. The thing I do the most here is writing, and I love writing. I've loved writing ever since I was a little kid. My mom said that as soon as I figured out that I could write my name and it meant something, she had these little notepads she would borrow, take home from the office, which I think is fine, you know, extra stationery. We all do that. We'd take them home for me and I would just write my name and try to write as many words as I could. And I had done that ever since I was a little boy. And so I've always enjoyed writing, and that's why I love writing articles for our magazine, writing booklets, and writing books. The new book I have out with Layla Miller, Made This Way, How to Explain Tough Moral Issues to Kids, both elementary, middle, and high school. I think that's actually the seventh book that I've authored, and there are going to be a lot more books coming down the road. A lot of people ask me, Trent, why do you write so many books for Catholic Answers? You know, one, how do you write so many books? And two, why do you write so many? I like to donate the royalties to a charity called Feed the Hungry Horn Children. So now that they're getting older, they actually demand a lot more real food. So, okay, that's fine. Still, the clothes will be hand-me-downs, and those should be fine for a while. That's what's nice about having two boys. So we'll see. If we keep having boys, we'll see how many kids the clothes can go through. But more importantly, I want to write books because I want to equip people. Books are still the best way, I think. I know a lot of people, you know, will watch YouTube videos, things like that, but nothing really compares to having a comprehensive defense and an explanation of something in a book that you can just sit down with and go through and really read and get at either a deep level or at a very solid level, even if you're just introducing a topic to someone. And so that's why I write these books. And honestly, one reason I've written so many and will continue to write so many is that there are a lot of topics that Catholics have not engaged, or they've only engaged in a very minimal way. So for example, when I wrote my book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties, I wrote that a few years ago, I was amazed. I thought, well, surely some other Catholic has written a big book on the difficult passages in Scripture, the ones that seem contradictory or immoral, things like that. I thought one of these, you know, Catholic biblical theologians had done that. And yet I didn't find that. I found biblical commentaries. I found answers here and there, but I didn't find any systematically and comprehensively written in one place that was also accessible to lay people. Because what's interesting is you'll find a lot of Catholic theologians and philosophers who will write great work on morality, on doctrine, on church history, but it's written more at an academic level, so lay people just can't get a lot out of it. Or you'll have lay authors writing on some of these subjects, but they write at too simple of a level, and they don't have nuance, and they miss really important points. So what I've tried to do in my own works is write at varying degrees. On the one end, you have stuff that's purely introductory, like why we're Catholic. I mean, I wrote that book so you could give it to anybody who has at least a high school or even a middle school education to read and understand, here's what Catholics believe and here's why it's reasonable. And it's written in a tone that's charitable and friendly, something you can give to anyone. It's not condescending, nothing like that. But then on the other end, you have books like Hard Sayings or The Case for Catholicism, where it's written that a motivated layperson, like someone who has an undergraduate degree at least, could read it and still get a lot out of it, where it combines academic research, but in a readable and understandable style. And on subjects, as I said before, Catholics haven't approached, like a comprehensive book on Bible difficulties, a comprehensive manual on how to explain abortion, an up-to-date defense of Catholicism in one volume against Protestant objections. And there's still a lot of books down the road that either they're subjects we don't have a Catholic book on, or there was a Catholic book on it, but it's, you know, 10, 20, 30 years old. And so now the time has come to kind of update that and talk about new developments in the field, new arguments, new rebuttals, new research, and to help it reach a new generation. So writing is probably one thing that I do hear the most. So when I write on forums, I usually put down, instead of apologist, which people, a lot of people don't know what that is, if on a form like occupation, writer, speaker, or writer. I also include speaker many times because speaking is something that I do quite frequently. I usually do about 2 or 3 trips a month to all different kinds of places. I used to travel primarily in the West and Midwest, but this fall I've been going back East like crazy. I've been to North Carolina, met some Patreon members there. It was great to meet you guys. I'm going to go back to South Carolina, to New Hampshire, and it's great getting around the country, and we have opportunities coming up soon in Australia and probably in Great Britain to take what I'm doing and take it to an international platform. So thanks everyone for your support and your prayers. That's making that possible. But one thing I do when I travel, I go and give talks, but one of my favorite kind of talks to do, put that in quotation marks, are debates. And so next Monday, I'm going to be debating Dan Barker at the Minnesota State University campus in Mankato. And we're going to be debating the question, does the Christian God exist? So Dan and I actually debated the question, well, it was more of a, the question, God, supreme being, or imaginary friend? Though Dan says that God is not an imaginary friend, you should take an R out of friend and that will show you who God is. He's an imaginary fiend, which I thought was clever that he came up with on the spot. And Dan is a clever guy. He is not a pushover. He has done debates since I think before I was born. He's done, I think, over 100 of them. So he's got a pretty solid style when he's up there. And, you know, I'm that kid still trying to learn the ropes, you know, but I'm giving it my best shot out there. And I think what I do, though, even though I don't have as much experience debating, I'm learning debating as I do it. What I try to do when I do debates is to be as prepared as I can when I go into them. So, you know, today and this week, I'm finishing up my preparations for my debate with Dan Barker next week. I've, you know, write up my opening statements, write up rebuttals, go through the evidence, and I learn Dan's material. You know, I've read Dan's book, Godless. I read that back when I first debated him in 2013, and he's published other books since then. One is called, the title is a quote from Richard Dawkins. The book is called God, the Most Unpleasant Character in All of Fiction. So those Bible difficulties are sure to come up in our debate. But fortunately, I wrote the book Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. So I think we'll have a good engagement in that regard. But why do I do debates? A lot of people think, you know, well, why do you go out there? Are you really going to change anybody's mind? Is this something worthwhile to do? And I would say it's absolutely worthwhile. Now, am I going to change Dan Barker's mind in this upcoming debate? Maybe. I mean, it would be great. I pray for it. But it's not at the top of my list of probably what I think will happen. The people's minds that I think are most likely to be changed from viewing a debate like this are those who are in the mushy middle. So people who are kind of in the middle, on the fence when it comes to believing in God or being Christian, they're open to both sides. So I really want to speak to them and say, hey, here is the evidence for our side. It's good evidence. Here's the arguments the other guy is giving, but here's what's wrong with those arguments. I know he's objected to my arguments, but here's why his objections don't work. And I hope there'll be reasonable people listening, watching this debate, will say, hey, I think that Catholic guy made a lot of good points, and he did so in a charitable way, and that's why your prayers would be appreciated. If you could say a prayer for me before my debate with Dan on Monday, I would thoroughly enjoy that. And I might even get a chance to talk to a few of you for our Nth Metal premium members. We're going to do a special private video chat with you all, I think a few hours before the debate. So if you are wondering about that, go on to trenthornpodcast.com and you can see when that's going to be scheduled. So I think it's so worthwhile because for me, when I was during my conversion process, when I was just a non-religious person, the thing that helped me move over into believing in Jesus, believing that God is real, he cares about us, he came down to earth and became man, what really brought that home for me were watching debates online, debates between Christians and atheists. And probably the one debater that has affected me the most and has affected a lot of people is William Lane Craig. He's a Protestant theologian and philosopher, teaches at Biola University, and Craig has the very unusual combination of being a first-rate philosopher. He's excellent analytic philosopher, can handle very, very tough conceptual issues, and also being a good debater. He's good at explaining things quickly, succinctly, and powerfully in debates, keeping track of his opponents, and then replying to them robustly. Debates, who wins or loses, ultimately the truth will win out. But in debates, you can have debates where people have the right position, but they argue it so poorly, they lose the debate. So you can be someone who has the correct position, but debate is an art. If you're not good at it, you can get pummeled up there. Much the same way, you could be totally wrong, but if you are just a really skilled debater, you can drive the other guy into the ground, even if you're totally wrong. So the value of debates, you might think, well, what's the value there? If we're trying to find truth, why would we watch debates? And I would agree debates are limited in that way. But on the other hand, people love sport. They love the combat, the clash of the titans. And so it's entertaining. People want to be entertained. See, now I'm a Maximus in Gladiator. Are you not entertained? But that's what I'm going to say on my debate in front of everybody. They want to be entertained. And you know what? We have to just accept that's the way people are. No one wants to click on a YouTube video that says, hey, 3-hour boring lecture on Catholicism. They don't want to do that. But if they want to see, hey, this atheist might beat up this Catholic, I want to watch that. I'm willing to take advantage of the fact that somebody wants to be entertained. If I can have their attention, inform them, evangelize them, catechize them, and entertain them, I will do that. Reminds me of what St. Paul said in his letter to the Corinthians. I have become all things to all men that I might win some. So I think debates are quite helpful and worthwhile to do that. And so that's why I really prepare for them. I enjoy doing them. And I'm preparing and reading Dan's materials and going back and forth, getting ready for my upcoming debate here on Monday. So a lot of people ask me, well, what are the secrets to doing debates? How do you become someone, how do you get really good at doing debates, like a William Lane Craig or, you know, somebody like that? And it's the same as anything else, practice, practice, practice. And so what's hard for me is, you know, I've done about a dozen debates maybe, and I feel much more comfortable debating now than I did 5 years ago. And I'm sure I'm going to feel way more comfortable 5 years from now than today. And it's unfortunate that all the debates I do now are forever immortalized on YouTube, but I think most of them have gone pretty well. But really, if you look at them, a lot of them, they're basically verbal boxing matches. They're intellectual sparring rounds. So when I get up there and do debates, I kind of feel like I'm stepping into the boxing ring. And sometimes I've got an opponent who, you know, I feel like I'm landing a lot of good blows and it's a technical knockout or a complete knockout. Other debates that I've done, it's more of a slugfest, I will tell you that. But I think those are the mark of really good debates because that means you've got another person who's just as able and equipped, if not more so, than the guy who's debating, than the guy you're watching. And you want to see the toughest, most knowledgeable people take each other on, just like in a good boxing match. You want to see them, you know, you want to see Rocky and Ivan Drago really go at each other. It's not fun if Rocky drops Drago in the first round, like how Drago just drops Apollo Creed. This was supposed to be an exhibition match. It's just an exhibition match. If he dies, he dies. So someone's going to ask me about the Barker debate. Do you think things of the Barker debate are going to get out of hand? If he dies, he dies. So for those of you who don't know what I'm quoting, that's Rocky IV, right after Rocky III, when the franchise really starts to take a dive. Though the Rocky franchise really came back with Rocky Balboa, which is a pretty good film, actually. I'd also recommend the Creed spinoff movies that have come from that. They're movies now about the son of Apollo Creed, who Rocky trains. But back to debates. They're like boxing matches, so you got to prep. But unlike in, so sometimes boxers will study footage of the people that they're going to fight. They want to see what their technique is. They want to understand how they're going to come at them. And so to be good at debates, if you want to go and do debates, even just to practice, you can do a mock debate with a friend or listen to a debate online and pause it when you hear the atheist or whoever it may be giving their argument, and then get up there and what would you say? What would you say in response? And it's a great way to learn about your faith, that if you can learn about it, how to present it in a challenging environment, then you will really know your faith very well. So what I do is, you know, like when it comes to Dan, I read his books. I watch his previous debates. It amazes me, ladies and gentlemen. It amazes me when I go to debates, I do not even think it's happened yet. I have not met an opponent who has rigorously read my works. It has not happened yet. Now, in some cases, this is because I didn't have works out on that subject. So, for example, when I debated James White on whether you could lose your salvation, James is a very skilled debater, and he preps a lot. I mean, he knows his opponent backwards and forwards, and I'm sure he would have read me backwards and forwards if he could. But, you know, I didn't have any written material on the subject we were debating, so I'm sure he just went at it the standard way, and he did go at it with his standard approach to the issue. But in other cases, you can research your opponent, and the more you can research, then the better you will be, because the key to doing well in debates is this. The key to doing well is being prepared beforehand. Many times, for example, when William Lane Craig seems to be just demolishing someone in the rebuttal period, that's because his rebuttal is pre-written. He knows the other guy so well, he knows what he's going to say. And so he has it kind of pre-written down on note cards or things like that. And I've done that as well. And I'll have some prepared responses for Dan, because Dan kind of gives a similar debate every time. Maybe he'll do something different this time and I'll have to think on my feet. That's fine. Good debaters are also prepared in that they've studied lots of different areas so they can recall at their fingertips good, quick responses. But the key when you do debates, see, the enemy you're fighting is not really that other guy up there. It's the clock. The clock is ticking down and those minutes just fly by. So the thing is, when you speak extemporaneously, when you speak off the top of your head, it's not good, because you speak slower, you speak in more roundabout ways, you use extra words that you don't need, and so you end up wasting time. So if you speak extemporaneously, just improvising during a rebuttal, in 7 minutes, you might only get 2 points across. Whereas if you had your rebuttal pre-written and you shaved down the word count to only have the essentials, you might be able to cover 5 points in your rebuttal. I know, for example, go online and watch my debate with Raphael Letaster at the University of Sydney. I had seen Raph, and I can call him Raph, he says that's fine, do debates with other people, and I know that Raph's approach is to throw the kitchen sink at people. He throws Bayesian probability theory, and he goes through all these different kinds of arguments really, really quickly to overwhelm his opponent. Ironically, that tactic that I've seen atheists use comes from a young earth Christian creationist named Dwayne Gish. It's called a Gish Gallop. When Gish would do debates on evolution, he would list in his opening statement 20 problems with the theory of evolution, or at least 20 things he considered to be a problem. And then the person defending evolution that he's debating against is like, great, there's 20 arguments he's raised, very brief arguments, and it takes me twice as long or three times as long to respond to an argument, an assertion, then for him to make it, then you just kind of get buried in arguments. That happens in debates, and I knew Raph was going to do that to me, so I had my rebuttal wordsmithed, cut down as lean as I could to cover all the different objections he was going to raise, and then systematically go through them in the rebuttal, and he was not prepared then. Now, he threw the kitchen sink at me. I have the opportunity to throw the kitchen sink back at him, because he has to rebut now all of my rebuttals. And then he just fell behind from that point, and I felt like he didn't really catch up. And so here's what's interesting is I went after the debate, and I went up to his table, and I said, hey, oh, I bought his book, Jesus Did Not Exist. I bought Letaster's book. And I said, hey, do you want to sign it? And he's like, you want to buy my book? I said, well, yeah, of course. Now, this was a book not pertaining to the subject of our debate, so I hadn't read it before. So I said, well, yeah, of course. It's, you know, a neat souvenir. You're here as the author. It'd be great for you to sign it. He's like, well, okay. And I said, would you like me to sign a copy of my book for you? He's like, oh, well, I don't have it. I'm like, we did a whole debate on atheism. I wrote a book called Answering Atheism. Surely you would have read that book to know what my major rebuttals would be to different arguments. Why wouldn't you familiarize yourself with my material? So that's what I always find funny in these things. So most opponents that I confront in debates, they haven't read my material, but I believe in reading theirs. And that's the key. Once again, if you want to get involved in debates, and it takes a very particular person to do this, but who knows? Maybe you are called to that. Maybe you're part of a high school debating team or college debating team, or you were involved in that. I would say, hey, we got to train more people to go out and do this if you have the call. Now, you don't want to get in over your head. I'd say, start small with the junior league matches before you start climbing up the rungs, but just see. But the key is when you're doing a debate or when you're doing any kind of presentation, it doesn't have to be something that's going to be on YouTube or is going to go to a ton of people. Maybe you'll get invited to go to a public high school class to offer an opposing view to Planned Parenthood. Like if Planned Parenthood comes into a public school classroom, you could say to the principal, hey, don't you think you should give equal time in a public school to an opposing view on important moral issues? You can go in, and I've had friends who have mentored me in speaking have done this. They have gone into public schools and done little impromptu debates and open forums like this. And maybe you're called to that, but I would just say to become good at debating, one, you got to have a solid prayer life, be connected to God. If you lose that connection, everything's going to fall apart. Two, know your material backwards and forwards. Take classes in public speaking if you need to, because a lot of times people judge debates not on what you're saying, but on how confident and clearly you present the material. It's true. People judge a book by its cover, and there's no getting around that, really. So we have to be, as communicators of the gospel, we have to know not just the gospel, but the art of communication itself. And three, when you're debating somebody, know that person backwards and forwards. Read their books, watch their debates on YouTube, listen to their lectures, get inside their head so they aren't able to get inside your head. And then once you know them better than they know themselves, you know every move they're going to make. And so you're going to be that kung fu Shaolin monk, wizard that's just, blocking punches with ease and things like that, and you'll be in command of the situation. So that is my little thought on debating, what I'm working on here in the workshop now. And this is a tradition on the podcast I want to keep going, that you can come sit in my office and just say, hey, what is Trent doing? What can I pray for? What can I learn from what he's involved in here on the Wednesday workshop? And I'm actually going to post a bonus part two of this episode at trenthornpodcast.com, where I'm just going to kind of recollect on the previous debates that I've done, where things went well, where they could have gone better. And I think that'll serve also to be a helpful educational tool for you all as well. So thank you guys so much. Please pray for my upcoming debate. I'll be praying for you all. And I hope that you have a blessed day. Continue to support the podcast. Visit trenthornpodcast.com and just have a blessed day, guys. Thanks.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trenthornpodcast.com.